Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Cheaper Than Therapy, a podcast that journeys into conversations that demystify, destigmatize, and desensitize what goes on both inside the therapy room and in daily life.
I'm Vanessa Bennett.
And I'm Danae Logan.
And we are seekers, soul sisters, and holders of sacred space. Every week, we sit down for soul-provoking conversations with fellow seekers, thought leaders, change makers, and even real people during live coaching sessions as they navigate the hard work it takes to be a human.
This is Cheaper Than Therapy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Cheaper Than Therapy. Well, this was a hilariously unexpected conversation.
I feel like we're really excited for this guest because we really love her work, but then I just was not expecting to laugh our way through the entire conversation. I don't know why I was like so surprised by how funny she is, but like, she was straight hilarious. I loved her.
I know. I'm like, for the listeners, we really tried to get deep into some of these topics and we just couldn't help ourselves. We were all giggling and laughing. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's 8 a.m. our time.
You can go to her Instagram and like get serious on the topics or her books. But yes, you will probably laugh quite a bit during this conversation, I would imagine.
I mean, I hope so. I think we're funny. So I hope people...
I don't think it's me. Like, I was just laughing at things she said. I was like, I don't know why I said anything funny, but she's amazing.
Well, we hope you guys enjoy this conversation you're about to listen to is with Nedra Glover Tawab, which most of you know from Instagram. Many of you know from Instagram. She's phenomenal. She's so smart. And she is the author of the bestsellers Drama Free and Set Boundaries, Find Peace, which that one actually went to New York Times bestseller. She's a licensed therapist and a sought after relationship expert. She has practiced relationship therapy for 15 years and is the founder and owner of the group therapy practice Kaleidoscope Counseling. She's been on everything, man. She's been on Red Table Talk. She's been on Good Morning America. She's been in the New York Times. I mean, all the things. She's such a gem. And now, I mean, I knew she was crazy intelligent, but now I also realize why everybody's having her on their show because she's so funny.
Yeah, it's a great one.
Enjoy, y'all. We are so excited to have Nedra Glover Tawab in the house. And we're excited because we get to pick your brain on so many things boundaries related and so many things drama related. You're like the go-to for all of these subjects. So thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to chat.
Yeah. So we usually start these conversations. I mean, we're both therapists as well. So we're so curious about like the what makes you you part of the conversation. So we usually start by just saying like, take us on a journey to understand how you got to where you are, right? Like what made you who you are today?
Well, as you know, many therapists, we work on the stuff we're working through, right? So for me, I had a lot of boundary issues in my family of origin, more on the poorest side of not healthy and not inflexible enough. So very flexible boundaries. And I remember being the sort of kid who asked a lot of questions. And my mother was somewhat open to it, but other adults would be like, yeah, girl, you cannot ask that question. Stop it. Right? Like, why are you with him if he won't? Like, I'm like, well, what is the, like, I just have so many questions about this situation you're in.
Holding up the mirror to everybody. And they're like, put that down.
Right. Like, what are you talking about? But when I was a kid, I used to think that we were just given a set of circumstances and we couldn't do anything about it because that's how so many adults seem to be. Like, this is the life I was given and I'm just moving through it. And this is the circumstance. And I would just be like, well, if you make this amount of money and your light bill is this much, why don't you just stop smoking? So you can pay the, you know, just, you know, very to the point. And not, certainly no nuance with me as a kid, but, you know, I do think it was some questions that maybe the adults hadn't considered. And, you know, for some adults, it was like, okay, you're talking too much and that sort of thing. So over time, I learned to just listen. You just listen to them say stuff. So that was my early training as a therapist. Because they were definitely oversharing. I knew way too much. But I just listened and, you know, after a while, I didn't even know that, you know, listening to people was a profession. So when I got to college and I found out you could be paid to listen, which is a tool I've been using for so many years, I was like, sign me up. So like, put my name on the roll book. Like, I want to do this thing. So, you know, I started learning how to be an effective listener because I wasn't an effective listener. I was just a listener. I was a, you know, ill-equipped advice giver. And so I started learning some tools. And I say, you know, I tried a few different things out in grad school. I thought I wanted to go the more macro way and do like nonprofits and grants and all this stuff. And I had an internship, hated it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is too much stuff. I want to work with the people. And I got another internship that was one-on-one. It was in a teen runaway shelter, lots of family issues, lots of dysfunction and boundary issues. My very first client was this teen girl in an incestuous situation. And that sealed my fate as a therapist, like listening and being there and supporting her. I was like, oh, I can do this forever or whatever the forever of this career is. So I feel like this career chose me. I didn't choose it.
I'm so struck by the emotional intelligence of you as a child, seeing patterns and speaking to them in a way that, you know, was upsetting to the people around you, but you also like just sort of intuitively realizing I need to pull this back because I can feel that it's making them uncomfortable and they're maybe not ready to process what I'm bringing to the surface for them. Like, you did that as a child. I feel like most of us didn't have that.
Well, I didn't have any tact when doing it. I think I was.
Who does as a kid, right?
Yeah, I probably was doing it in the most inappropriate way possible, like very aggressively, like, you know, because I was just, I just saw a lot of adults who weren't managing their situations in a way that maybe I read in a book or saw on Oprah, or I just, you know, I had language to be like, this person is an addict. This person is an alcoholic. This is molestation. That is not your boyfriend. He's too old. You know, like I just knew these things, but it was like the way I was saying them, it, you know, it probably did not come out well, but the language and the ideas were sort of there.
It's confronting. Yeah. And so do you feel like there were, you know, things that you already understood early on about boundaries being violated because you were seeing them on TV, because you were reading different things that you started to feel compelled to speak to, I don't know, in some of those environments that you were working in early on?
Absolutely. And I would say, you know, a lot of my own boundaries, like mm-hmm. I've had to manage how to speak my truths to people and how to allow them to have a preference and also honor my own preference. You know, mm-hmm. I think for many of us, we are talked out of having about boundaries that could be very appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of women sometimes, you know, I asked my husband one day, I'm like, do you ever get scared when it's dark outside? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no. If my husband is not home and I have to go in the basement, I turn into an 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my gosh, I can hear the furnace. There's a man down here to get me. I'm like, someone's gonna get me. Yeah. You know, but just that, the boundaries as a woman that we have to have mm-hmm. around physical and mm-hmm. sexual safety mm-hmm. is, you know, something that I had to learn early, yes. you know, which most women do, like, you know, you don't do this. You can't, you know, no one's teaching us like, hey, no one should violate you. Yes. It's not about what you wear. It's not about where you're at. It's not about if you had a drink. It's about, hey, this shouldn't happen. But, mm-hmm. you know, just the boundaries that we have to learn early on and be able to implement for ourselves, it yeah. is a crucial thing.
Mm. I was just thinking how I was just talking to my partner the other day. I have a little girl who's just about four. And I was saying there's this thing that's been going around on TikTok that I'm obsessed with, which is like these older women teaching younger girls, like remember like the Miss Mary Mac, the hand slap thing, but the thing that mm-hmm. they're, I wish I could remember exactly what it is, but it's basically like, you're not responsible for making men comfortable, mm-hmm. for keeping men comfortable. And mm-hmm. it's like, you're not responsible for like, basically like creepy guys. Like they say, like, you're not responsible for like keeping the creepy guys comfortable. And they're teaching these little girls this chant. And I'm like, where was this chant 20 years ago? This is amazing. But it kind of speaking to what you're saying, we didn't teach girls that. It was just like, you got to protect yourself, keep yourself, you know, don't wear that thing. Don't do that thing. Don't walk down that alley versus being like, this is just not acceptable behavior, period.
Yeah. Yeah. I should be able to show my little belly button with my little short skirt. Like that's what that little 14-year-old body was for. Mm. Like it shouldn't, right? It shouldn't have to cover up, you know, how, mm-hmm. yeah, I should be able to wear stuff like that, but to have mm-hmm. to consider, you know, like, oh my gosh, if I do this and that, just, you know, all the things that we must learn to be able to exist. And even when we know those things, how we're mm-hmm. still violated, you know, it's really important for us to talk about what those boundaries look like. And like you said, like now there's so much conversation around, like, you know, it's not you, it is this perpetrator, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not your fault. And that's not the messaging that was given to us when we were younger. And, you know, some people still aren't getting it, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. I'm so struck by, I think Vanessa and I talk a lot about self-abandonment and where that originates. And I think mm-hmm. there's so many ways that we learn, especially as women early on, to really manipulate situations and relationships, a lot of times to keep ourselves safe, as mm-hmm. you're speaking to, right? Like, I think there's so many ways that it's like, you know, don't do whatever around Uncle So-and-so because he drinks and, you know, mm-hmm. things could, whatever. It's not even like necessarily explicit things mm-hmm. that were spoken. We just got the messaging that there's something mm-hmm. you need to do to minimize yourself. And I think there's so many ways that we are really conditioned early on to not say the thing. This makes me uncomfortable. I don't want you here. I don't want to not wear a swimsuit, whatever it
yeah.
is.
But don't touch yeah. me. I don't like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it continues into our adult relationships. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's just often such a lack of intimacy that's gone on for years, because that's just what we learn so early, is how to like manipulate other people in situations to keep ourselves safe. And I'm wondering, like, as we talk about boundaries, Nedra, what do you think are some of the misunderstandings about what boundaries are. Because I find a lot of times boundaries are really like misunderstood as like walls and cutoffs. Yeah. There's a lot of cutting off that happens in families when we attempt to start to set boundaries, right? Mm.
Yeah, I think the cutoffs are happening because people are unwilling to allow confrontation. And when you shut down the ability for someone to talk to you about who you are and how you may have impacted them, it can be really hard for a person to continue to exist in a relationship with someone who won't have any accountability for what they did. You know, sometimes for you to exist in a relationship where someone is trying to gaslight you and make you think that what happened didn't really happen. That questioning of self in a time where you are trying to reclaim yourself, you're trying to acknowledge your voice, you're trying to, you know, make sense of your story, and you're in these relationships where someone is saying, no, no, it didn't happen like that. That wasn't that. They meant this, you know, all of that stuff. It can be very hard. And so I do understand why people choose to cut off family members. It's not always the necessary decision, but certainly sometimes it is.
Felt that in my body as you're saying it. I think there's, I don't know, there's something in how much of a misunderstanding there is. I find, especially like, I don't know if this is true of several communities, but definitely in the Black community, I hear a lot about like, that's your mama. Like, you know, you don't not speak to your mama. And I often say, I've never known someone who stopped speaking to a family member without a pretty substantial reason behind it. So I don't know. I don't want to make assumptions, but I think that that's not something people speak to a lot. Like how difficult it is to be in that space of exile a lot of times from our family members when we realize I can't like thrive and like become the person that I am meant to become in these family dynamics. You know what I mean?
I remember reading a book, oh gosh, I must have been in high school. And at that time, I was really down a urban fiction path. And there was this book by Iceberg Slim. And the book is called Black Mama Widow. And it is about the negative impact that this mother has on all of her children. I think most of them in this book maybe die in some tragic way, and one of them lives, but it's just a very scarred and fractured person. And that, you know, I think sometimes we think like, oh, self-help is where you get the message. I got the message in Mama Black Widow that there are parents who will pull you down, not even intentionally, but as a byproduct of their damage.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a byproduct of the damage.
You're saying a lot of things I'm feeling in my body.
And then a total inability or I guess I'll leave it at inability to look at that damage, right? To even like turn that rock over sometimes.
Yeah, people can love us and not know how to care for us. And in families, it's often, well, I love you. And there's this simultaneous hurting happening, right? This pain inflicted. And so we start to think, well, they can't be hurting us. Like that hurt must not be real because they love us, because those things can't coexist. Oh, yes, they can. They can love you and not care for you. They can love you and harm you. So love does not mean that people will treat you well. Maybe it should mean that, but that is not always the case, particularly in families. And so we start to, when those family relationships are like that, oh, buddy, get ready for the world. If those family relationships are like that, what do you think those friendships are going to be like? What do you think those partnerships are going to be like? What do you think your relationships with your children? Oh, coworkers, you know, everyone else is going to get a little bit of that damage if you don't work through your stuff.
God,
I'm like, I could go five directions. I'm watching you think today.
Yeah, like that statement kind of took my breath away that people can love you and not care for you, because that's so real. And these are the types of things that I think people don't talk about very often. In depth psychology, they talk about it in the context of the deaf mother archetype, which is, I guess, this Black Widow. I'm like writing that down because I want to go read it. But I think this is especially something Vanessa and I've talked about with mothers and daughters. That there is a way that like daughters will experience a sense of contempt from their mothers as they start to thrive or heal or,
shine.
Move away from whatever that can just feel like debilitating to attempt to stay in relationship with this person that you love so much. And I can feel your lack of care for me. I can feel your like wanting to like pull the life out of me. And I think it's really confusing because that child within us still desperately wants to be loved by that mother and knows I can't breathe here. I'm suffocating in your love, right?
Mm. Yeah. I am suffocating in your love. Your love is hurting me. Mm-hmm. It is not helping me. And I think of, this thing that most parents will say to their kids, I just want you to be happy. Mm. My happiness might be apart from you.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, and my happiness might also be confronting to you. I think we get that message a lot. I know I did growing up, but it was like, I just want you to be happy. But the underlying message is, as long as it's within these parameters and as long as it doesn't hold a mirror up to me in any way. Because the second that happens, then your happiness isn't top priority. Your happiness gets bumped down that ladder because my self-preservation needs to come first, right? And I think that even as children, we know that. Like we know it somewhere, that I have to stay within the confines of like what keeps this relationship copacetic. And if I go outside of that, then there's going to be consequences. And I knew that. I never was told that explicitly, but I know that I grew up with that understanding, and I know that it trickles into my romantic relationships. I know it trickles into my friendships, right? Mm-hmm. That like, if things aren't copacetic, there's going to be payback basically in some way.
I remember directly being told that by my father, because I'd said something to him. I must've been in late elementary, early middle school. I said something to him and he got furious and he was like, you can't talk to me that way. Why would you say that? And my little naive self is like, cause that's how I felt, and I got in trouble. I don't remember what trouble was. It was probably a good cussing out, but I got in some trouble. And to this day, he'll bring up, remember that time you said so-and-so? And I'm like, I meant that. I think I still mean that today. I'm like, ooh, I was so insightful.
Like, I was good for that age, man. Got
it. That was my best talk show Nedra I could think of.
Tell me you were called an old soul when you were a kid. Because I feel like a lot of us, especially in this room, were probably told, you're such an old soul. And now I look at that as like, let's talk about what that really means. Because when somebody calls a kid an old soul, that's supposed to be a compliment. But I look at that as like, I see things and I say things that other people can't see and say. I've been given a lot more shit to hold than I should have ever been given at a certain age, right? I'm far too, air quote, mature for what I should be at this age. And I think people say that the stuff to us, like it's such a good thing. And now I look at it and I'm like, that's not a compliment. That's not a compliment.
Oh, I remember being told, by countless family members, your mother is you're the only person your mother will listen to. Well, I'm 10. I'm 10.
I got told the same shit. Yeah, wow.
I don't know how. I am the only person that she will listen to. Like, your 57.
Same shit happened to me. Oh my God.
10-year-old children should not be leading.
I should not have been leading the village. Yes. But I was certainly told that by, you know, multiple family members, like, you have to talk to her. You're the only person. I'm like, mm-hmm. me? Mm-hmm. I can't even drive. Like, mm-hmm. I can't, you know, I don't want this responsibility, but, you know, I took it.
Yeah.
I took it. And I, you know, I would relay the message of whatever that thing was, like, all right, girl. Yeah. So this is what they saying, yep. You know? But yeah, it's not an honor to be in mm-hmm. that position, because what happens is you become the person who is listening so well that you're not listened to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Amen.
And reclaiming that part of yourself that needs to be heard. And that's for mm-hmm. all therapists, because therapists, you know, we get in this mode of, I'm the problem solver. I know, I have an opinion. I can CPT my way through this. Mm-hmm. I know the right answer. And it's like, listen, we are not a therapist in our personal lives. Mm-hmm. We are humans and we have experiences and we need people too. We are not, you know, I don't always want to be the go-to. I want to be a go-to at work, but when I get home, I need to be held and able to share and, you know, call my friends and talk and share and, you know, let these things out. I don't want to be the container in all spaces, because I think of it as, you know, putting some acid in the jar and shaking it up and that little baby will just pop right off. Mm. So I need my own space to be able to be a full human. And so for many of us who were, you were mature for your age, you're so wise, your parent listens to you and all of this sort of stuff, it creates the sort of individual who has to struggle with figuring out how to share themselves with other people, because mm-hmm. their experience in the world has been that of being there for other people and not mm-hmm. being there with people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, building on that, there was something you were saying about your dad that really struck me about, you know, I think we're a generation that were raised by parents a lot of times that would talk about, like, you respect your elders and that you need to respect your parents. And I think the word respect is kind of an interesting word when you really break down what respect means, because a lot mm-hmm. of times, as my adult self, I will see behaviors. And I think you talk about this a little bit when you talk about, like, drama in families, where it's just like, I don't respect the way that you're showing up in this life right now. And I think mm-hmm. that can be hard, because it's like, you know, maybe some of the people in our family aren't doing a lot of work to understand their patterns and understand their, you know, they don't have a lot of tools. And yet, you know, it's that thing of, like, you go home and people just see you the way that they've always seen you and expect you to kind of slide back into those roles. And what does that look like as an adult to attempt to be respectful of the elders, the people in your mm. family that you love? But also, there's a lot about the way you're showing up that I frankly don't respect. You know what I mean? Mm.
Well, you know, sometimes I think these elders are not eldering like my grandmother. Oof, you know, this eldering is not equal. Mm. This eldering is looking very different mm-hmm. than what you're wanting respect for. You know, the first thing with respect is you have to be a person who deserves to be respected. Mm-hmm. What people are saying when they say respect is, I want to be obeyed and mm-hmm. unquestioned. That's very different than respect that you've earned. Mm-hmm. We don't even have to tell people to respect us when we've earned the respect. It's just something that happens. Go watch a good teacher in a classroom. Do you think that teacher has ever said, respect me, kids? No, she has not. He has not. But what has probably happened is they demonstrate a level of care, of being boundary, of being honorable, to the point that the kids naturally respect them. Yes. We're not always seeing this with elder family members, but there is this idea that, hey, this person that you saw, you know, yelling and screaming yesterday, respect them. What?
Yep.
This person? Oh, okay. I got to respect them. You know, so sometimes they're not doing the things that humans would naturally respect in another person, but they do want to be obeyed and unquestioned.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so now we're adults, right? I mean, it's one thing you come out of childhood and these are the kind of screwed up messages that you get. And then as an adult, going back to this idea of self-abandoning, because I feel like one of the questions that we wanted to talk to you about was this feeling of like staying with yourself. Like, what does it look like to stay with yourself when you're in these challenging dynamics? So now I'm an adult. Now I'm faced with whether it's trying to set a boundary, whether it's a cutoff, whether it's, you know, engaging with people who clearly have never earned my respect. And now I'm attempting to act in alignment with where I'm at and where I want to be as a person, right? And these people are pushing every button they can, and they're really trying to get me to come back into that space. I guess like the question would be, what do you feel like you usually talk to people about like staying with yourself through that and not slipping back into old patterns? Because that's the thing about boundaries, right? That I find interesting in conversations with clients is because we talk a lot about boundaries being like the thing you enact, the wall you put up, but we don't talk enough about this. The second half of the boundary is how you will respond when the person almost inevitably tries to get you to kind of slide back, right? What are you going to do? How are you going to hold yourself in that situation? I mean, I'm curious to know kind of what that brings up for you.
Well, in a perfect world, when we place a boundary with someone, they will listen and forever honor it, right? Yeah. That is a perfect scenario. In the real world, a lot of the work of the boundary is on us.
Yeah, that's right.
When you have a person who is intrusive, let's say, with your time, they might just be intrusive with time boundaries. And you will constantly have to say, no, it will be this. No, it will be this. No, I'm not of it. No, you will have to do that work. And for some of us, we get so tired of this person being themselves that we're just like, you know what? Done with this relationship. I'm done with you. Now, there are different levels to what we're willing to deal with. There are different levels to, you know, now I say to myself, if I'm going to have a challenging parent, I'm not going to have no challenging cousin.
I only got so much space in my life.
I only got so much space.
That's the fucking.
I can't have five challenging people that I'm trying. Damn. Look, I have very few spaces for challenging people.
I'm gonna say slots.
Listen, less than five. I have 1.5 slots. This other person only got half a challenge that they can have. So anybody else, friend, partner, dog, listen, the spaces are taken because I only got 1.5.
So, sorry, you didn't make the cut.
You did not make the cut. Now, for some of us, maybe it is five spaces. Maybe it's 10. I'm not sure.
Listen, I think you need to pull it back. If you've got 10 spaces, you need to have a conversation in therapy about this.
But if somebody gets to 11, no, I only got 10. So you figure out what your capacity is, because that's the thing. Everyone has a different capacity. Like sometimes I'll talk to people and I just, you know, make a personal note to myself. Ooh, their capacity is different than my capacity, because that is something that I could not tolerate. And then there are things that that I have a capacity for that they don't have a capacity for. So it's, you know, we're not all the same. There are some things that I really care about that other people don't, and vice versa. And so we can't even look at other people's boundaries and say like, oh, that's a boundary I should have. Why? Mm-hmm. Is it even, you know, like sometimes with people, you know, I've heard this a lot with friends, and I just asked my text group the question, like, how do you handle a friend who's always late? And one of my friends was like, oh, I just cannot tolerate it. And the other one was like, well, you know, I will have a conversation. I said, girl, it's me. I'm going to be 5 minutes late. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not too late, but I will be about 5 minutes late. And I said, you know what? I generally don't care about people being late as long as they show up. Shoot me a text. Now, what I will say to you is just send me a text so I can sit in my car or, you know, if we're meet, yeah. There's other things I could be doing. So just let me know you'll be late. I don't really care about that. So we all have different levels of this is a no for me. This is a, and then I don't care. Mm-hmm. So sometimes with boundaries, what'll happen is we will try to take Vanessa's boundary and say, oh, this should be my boundary with my mom. Well, you have a whole different history with your mom. You have a whole different history with your sister. Is this a boundary that you even really want to carry out? Is this a boundary that you could stick to? Because the worst boundary to have is one you can't even honor.
Yes.
And so that's sometimes why we're having challenges with, you know, this person respecting our boundaries, because we can't even respect the boundary. And we've put all the work that they don't even want to have on them to, oh, here's my boundary and you have to do all this stuff. Well, when they don't do it, can you uphold your end of the bargain? If not, you know, maybe not. I have two kids, and my oldest is always like, you should give her a punishment. I said, I do not want to punish her, because you know what's going to happen? She's going to be talking to me during that whole punishment. I'm not. I can't even handle the boundary.
Punishing myself.
Punishing myself.
That's real.
I'm like, no, she is getting no consequence.
You want to uphold her consequences for me?
Do you want her to come talk to you?
That's amazing. I love it.
I don't want to do it for an hour and a half or whatever length of time. I'm like, I just told her to stop. If she don't want to listen, then she's just not listening, because I'm not.
Well, and I love that you're speaking about the difference in like different people's boundaries, because I haven't really heard people speak about that, but also capacity, because I find like since having a child, my capacity for some people's stuff has diminished to the point of like, I might have had time and patience for this, and I just don't have it anymore.
Danae, I have 5 spaces before I had kids. I had 5 spaces before kids. Once I had kids, it went to 1.5. I promise you. I have 5 capacity spaces. I did full messiness. Bring me your stuff. It went down. Yeah. It went down. Yeah.
That's real.
That is so real. And, you know, I feel like Danae and I talk, we're so honest about the mothering stuff and like how funny we think it is, how people are just so like, this is lovely and I never have any problems. And then I are always like, you're full of shit. If you don't, you're like, what are you talking about? You don't have problems. But it's like the capacity thing is real. And I don't think as mothers, we talk about the capacity diminishing. I mean, I'll tell you, I actually have more respect for my mom now that I'm a mom in that sense, because I'm like, of course you had no capacity. I barely have capacity for my own shit these days, right? Because I'm so consumed with her shit, right? And so then when my partner comes to me with shit, I'm like, no, you're not. I don't even have space for you right now, right? And that's hard. So I think especially not just early motherhood, but even like that teen age too, when they need even more spaces. They're more than one space per person. But to be a mom and be able to have capacity for even yourself or your partner when you're over here trying to hold space for so many people, and then you're a therapist, right? On top of that, which is that's your job. And then the social media space, even still, like that's a whole other, I mean, I'm aware of our time, but that's a whole other conversation Danae and I were interested in having with you, is like you hold space at work, you hold space as a parent, you hold space as a partner. Now you're on social media, holding space as a social media therapist. And people are trying to push boundaries there, left and right. And Danae and I were just, anyway, I could go on and on.
Oh, you think I'm a social media therapist, Vanessa?
Well, I mean, somebody who has a presence, you know?
I'm curious, what do you
what did that bring up for you?
I got to file that on my taxes. I haven't been putting that down.
Somebody with a presence.
You're very funny. Like, that's very entertaining. I like you.
Holding boundaries on social media, I think it's just, it's been something that Danae and I have also talked about navigating. And we laughed at, you know, you put a post up the other day around, you can just leave. Like, you don't need to, you know, come in people's comments and write a whole diatribe. And like, and Danae and I are laughing. We laughed at that comment because we're like, oh, it's the same shit with us. And anyway, thoughts.
Well, this is where some of working on myself shows up, because these messages that I type up to send to people, when I tell you that the ancestors just delete them from my phone and say, "Woo, not today. Not today. Not today. Not today." What you will do is ignore. that's what you will do.
That's your growth.
Oh,
just like delete as
the response that I conjure up is so good sometimes. Oh my gosh, it's so good that I'm like, oh, if I
told you about yourself right now,
because I don't went through your whole profile, honey.
To break it down.
I've gotten low down. Okay, no, I haven't, but. You know, I think the internet is an interesting place. Mm-hmm. It gives people a voice. It has given me a voice. Mm-hmm. It's given, you know, people connection to other mm-hmm. things. And all voices are not created equal. Mm-hmm. I think with girls, there's a book called Girls on a Brink. And it talks a lot about social media and the impact on mental health and self-esteem and, you know, socialization. And it's a wonderful book. And there has been more work around like teens and social media, but these adults, and social media is its own crisis that we don't talk about enough.
Yeah.
The adult bullying. Yeah. The adult belittling, the adults who say things just to get attention. There have been some times where I've responded and I've been very shocked by people saying, oh, I said that because I didn't think you would respond. Why would you say such mean and terrible things? You're not speaking on this topic. You said this about this. You believe in rape. Just all of this stuff.
Oh yeah.
They haven't went through my entire feed. They've missed some stories where I may have posted something. They don't know me personally. They just all of these things that they do not know, but they have this big assertion. And it's really big and it's mean. And it's like, I don't think you understand it. I'm a human being. I am not a bot. I'm not AI.
Yep.
I am a whole person. And so when you say something to another human in the name of anything else, let's say that you're fighting for a cause and you feel that I'm not, you're speaking to another human.
That's right. Yeah.
But you're a nice person though. And I'm not.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Thank you for speaking to that, because I think especially the atmosphere has been so polarizing right now. And I know there was a while where I was just like, I got to get out of here because this is rough. But I think that there's a way that when people are on a platform putting themselves out there, let's be honest, sometimes in a way that is vulnerable, you know, to your point, we are still human beings. I think there is a way that people can process whatever is coming up for them around the upset sort of at people that have platforms. And I think there's a way that, you know, I can be pretty good at like titrating into like, okay, this is like not about me, unless it's something like about my child, personal. Which is very much like, yeah, like that level of personal. And then I do find myself like, do you realize that like I'm a human being and it's pretty easy from the cheap seats with like nobody picking apart your life too, to have these opinions. But I think it's, I don't know, there's something about the atmosphere of social media and these platforms right now that has just been very like this like wounded energy of like, we feel really entitled to tell people who to be in the world right now.
But it's, I think it's a boundary thing too. I mean, talk about boundaries. It's like the way that we are accessible, or at least it feels like we are accessible at all times on social media. I think that in and of itself distorts people's perceptions of boundaries. Like it's this idea, like you just said, Danae, it's like, I get a lot of like, you should do this. You shouldn't say that. Why don't you? It's like, there's this expectation of like, you are on this platform. And so your purpose is to serve me and whatever I need, whenever I need it. And there's a little bit of like, almost like expectation of like, I don't know if it's like a parent energy, like, well, you should be saying this, you should be making me feel better. And I'm like, I shouldn't be doing
that. I would be okay with that perspective if I were being paid to be there.
That's, but thank you, that's because that right. was something that somebody said, like, oh, you should be, we did a retreat and somebody posted something about like, oh, you should be doing this for free and you should be putting this out there for free. And I'm like, who says who? What? I'm sorry, but that's it. Thank you for saying that.
If I am being paid to be on social media, which I am not.
Yep.
Even if a person does an ad, they're being paid by that company. They're still not being paid by you, the consumer. If I am being paid, if I am your waitress, I will bring you ketchup. I will make sure. Oh, you got enough stuff? I'm not being paid to be here. This is all volunteer work. Volunteer work of my time, of my giving. And so consider that before you say what I should be doing. Now, if you want to cash at me, I might go and put what you say up.
I might bring you ketchup, okay?
I might bring you ketchup. Now it's your time. Now it's your time. You done paid me to say this. Now I'm on your dime. I tell my clients that all the time. Oh, you're probably tired of hearing about this. I am not tired of hearing about none. You want to pay to tell me. Not one day. Yeah. Tell me more. But you are not paying me to say anything. Now, if you want to pay for a little message, I got an invoice I could send you and I will put the message out. But if you are listening to free, I will talk about tea. I talk about my new water bottle. I'm going to talk about my plants. I'm talking about whatever I want to talk about. But if you want to pay, hey, you own the space. Yeah. This is your space now.
Yeah. I mean, it's real though. And I think that there's, you know, if we bring it back to capacity again, I think it's like, these are offerings. These are offerings in the hopes that they are supportive to someone. If it doesn't feel that way, you know, move it along. Block and flex. Like, you do not have to follow the offerings.
Yeah. And please don't tell me why. How are we? This is what I think every time somebody loves to send me a message about leaving.
Yeah.
I don't even know you. How are we breaking up and we're strangers? How did we break up and we're strangers? We don't even have to break up. Like, I didn't even have to know about this.
Yes. But they are in a relationship with you. You might not be in a relationship with
clearly,
them.
So, it's so like, they are breaking up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like walking past a restaurant saying their bathroom is dirty. You're not even in there. So, the only person who could say the bathroom is dirty are the people who go in the bathroom. Like, that's now a relationship. Yeah. I can't walk past a building and say, what are you talking about? That's how I think about social media. Like, you have gone so far to just... Yeah. Do you know what I do when I don't want to email unsubscribe? I don't send them a message and say, you know what? Y'all color palette is whack this
year. Sensitive to my eyes.
It's sensitive to my eyes. Why y'all having so many shades of pink?
Oh my God.
Just unsubscribe. Just leave. Just take your little doggy bag and go home. No. I don't need to hear anything about why you're leaving and how you're tired of me posting books instead of, yes, what?
Mm-hmm. It's just all very cathartic.
Listen, again, if you want me to deliver your message, I will. For fee.
Shopper.
It's not going to be no small fee, but
ketchup is not free, people.
Oh, God. Well, I feel like we didn't even scratch the surface.
I know.
The things we wanted to get to, but just really enjoyed this conversation and laughed so much. So thank you, Nedra. But we have a lightning round of questions that we ask all of our guests.
Okay. I'm ready.
So the first is, who have been your greatest teachers, mentors, people that have impacted your journey up to this point, whether they're people you know or just their work has really impacted you?
I would like to say the people in my home. I didn't realize so much about children and childhood and development until I had my own children and I've been watching them developmentally unfold. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to read it in a book. It's one thing to have experienced it. And it's a whole nother thing to watch it. To see who we are before the world got a hold of us and changed parts of our personality. It's quite amazing. It's the best psychological study I could ever witness.
That's the truth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this concept of flow, right? I mean, people have different perspectives on it, but what is it that you find yourself doing when you kind of blink your eyes and an entire day can be gone?
Entire day could be gone?
Or maybe a couple hours. Depends on where you rank on the ADHD spectrum.
I love how you said spectrum. It is a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think flow is dependent on what I'm in need of at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes flow for me is writing. I can get into a little writing, you know, and I'm just going. Sometimes flow for me is getting into a group chat with a friend and I'm just like, girl, no, this, I'm gonna send a voice note. I can't even type this fast.
Yeah.
Sometimes flow is reading a good book. You know, it just means for me different things on different days and being in tune with what that need is.
I love that. What does your soul need in that moment?
Yeah.
And what breaks your heart?
What breaks my heart? People who can't acknowledge the harm that they caused others.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it really impact their life and relationships in a way that it doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sad that they can't allow that level of ownership.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agree with that one.
Yep. Both feel that one. And then the last question is a doozy. What's your favorite food? I like the serious contemplation.
Pasta. I know. It's like, it's pasta. It's fettuccine. It's linguine. It is penne, it is squid, it is all the pastas.
All the pasta. I'm not mad at that answer.
All the pastas. I go to the there's a farmer's market I go to and they sell fresh pasta and I'll buy just different types of pasta. The ones that are not quite lasagna, but it looks like lasagna. I always get the name mixed up. ravioli, and I will buy them and I freeze them. And it is quite delightful discovering a new recipe to make. Ugh. You know, someone said to me, like, you should start making pasta. I'm like, why? I go to the farmer's market and they make the fresh pasta. Why do I need to buy a machine? It's fresh. It's right there. But it's so delicious. So favorite meal, it's something with pasta and a sauce.
Well, in that same vein of delightful, I must say, Nedra, I think you go to your page and you get certainly a sense of how brilliant you are, how much wisdom you carry, but you would never know how hilarious you are. So I feel like it's been such a gift just to sit with you for an hour and experience that. But all jokes aside, thank you for all that you are putting out into the world in terms of support. I know that you are just having such an incredible impact on so many lives, and it's really an honor to meet you. And thank you for coming on and sharing some of your wisdom with us.
You're welcome. I get that often about humor because people see me as so serious. I'm talking about these serious topics. And so people are like, oh, you're like this. And then they talk to me and they're like, oh, you're a goofball. I'm like, yeah, girl, I'm a goofball. I love a joke. So yeah, it's nice to be both.
Yeah. It is. It is. Well, for those listening, we'll link all the books, and we don't even need to. People know who you are, but we'll link the books. We'll link your Instagram, set boundaries, find peace, drama free. You got a lot of stuff out there. It's good stuff. We love it.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Nedra.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cheaper Than Therapy.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, and give us a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And if you want to connect with us more, find us on Instagram at Cheaper Than Therapy, the podcast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.